others accumulate bank accounts that become the cause of endless worries to themselves and a source of discord in their families. On the other hand, we must keep in view the fact that 70% of the earthly executives are still far from being conscious of the moral responsibilities inherent in their positions, and that the same may be said of an approximately equal percentage of those toiling under their direction. The majority of them spend their lives pleading lack of professional enthusiasm, yet it would never enter their heads to doubt their right to the remunerations corresponding to the positions they so inadequately hold. Governments and firms employ doctors, who neglect their sacred duty, turning to other channels of activity instead. Workmen pride themselves in wasting the time for which they are paid. Where is the quality of work? In all sectors of public life, in both high and low positions, one finds experts who have never fully realized the responsibility of their obligations, and who, like poisonous flies on bread, avail themselves of magnanimous laws to claim all sorts of facilities, bonuses, and pensions. You may be sure, however, that they will pay a bitter price for their carelessness. The time seems to be still distant when the Earth's social institutions will be able to evaluate the quality of man's work, but in the higher spirit plane, work is never assessed without taking into consideration the moral effort exerted. These words awakened a new train of thoughts in my mind. Seeing how interested I was in the subject, Laura continued to speak, "The real profit must be of a spiritual nature. And in our organization the actual value of the hour bonus varies according to the nature of the work performed. Thus, in the Ministry of Regeneration we have the Regeneration Hour Bonus, in the Ministry of Elucidation we have the Elucidation Hour Bonus, and so on. Spiritual merit is always taken into account, so our individual service files specify the essence of our work. Fundamental acquisitions include experience and education, an increase in divine blessing, and the extension of opportunities. According to that point of view, assiduity and abnegation are by far the most important factors. As a rule, most of us in this colony of transition go through a time of preparation for our return to the earth. Hence, it's obvious that a man who devoted 5,000 hours to redeeming tasks should have achieved a great measure of sublime effort on his own behalf. One who worked 6,000 hours in the Ministry of Elucidation will have become wiser. We may spend our bonuses as we please, however, our individual file with its record of the time we spent in useful service, is still a more valuable asset to us, as it entitles us to all sorts of privileges. My curiosity seemed to know no bounds as I continued to ask questions on the subject. May we spend our bonuses on behalf of friends? Certainly, she answered. We may share the fruit of our efforts with whomever we please. It's every faithful worker's inalienable right. Thousands and thousands of people here in the Astral City have benefited from the fruits of friendship and brotherly devotion. Liza's mother smiled as she continued her observations. The longer our period of useful service, the greater the number of intercessions we are allowed. Here, we cannot help realizing that everything has its price, and that in order to receive we must give. Asking, therefore, is a most significant thread in the fabric of our lives. For only those who have attained a certain spiritual status are in the position to ask favors and dispense help. And what about inheritance? I inquired abruptly. It's a simple matter here, she replied with a smile. For instance, in my own case, the time is drawing near when I shall have to return to the physical sphere. Well, I possess at the present moment in my service account, 3,000 assistance hour bonuses. I may not leave them to my daughter who is about to arrive, as they will have to revert to the community. The only thing my family will inherit is the home. However, my service record entitles me to intercede on her behalf, procuring work and friendly cooperation for her, and precious assistance for myself from our colony's organizations during my stay on the physical sphere. Besides, I shall return to Earth endowed with a higher degree of experience, acquired during my years of cooperation in the Ministry of Assistance, which should contribute to the hoped-for success of my new human existence. I was about to express my admiration for the simple process of earning, profiting, cooperating and serving, in comparison with the prevailing principles on Earth, when I heard the low murmur of voices approaching the house. Before I could make my remark, Laura declared, "Here are our dear ones back." And she went to welcome them. Chapter 23, The A-Worthy of Listening. I could not help feeling sorry that our talk was interrupted, for Laura's elucidations were most stimulating. Liza's had come back in evident good spirits. "Hello. Haven't you retired yet?" he asked with a smile. While the two young men took their leave, he invited me cordially to come down to the garden. "You haven't seen the moonlight from this side of town," he said. While Laura talked with her daughters, I followed Liza's into the garden. It was really a magnificent sight. Accustomed as I was to the hospital grounds, which were secluded among large trees, I had not yet had the opportunity to contemplate the wonderful spectacle of a moonlit night from the spacious quarters gloxinias of the Ministry of Assistance. Exquisitely colored gloxinias enhanced the beauty of the scenery and provided a vivid background for fragrant, snow-white lilies, which were slightly tinged with blue at the base of their cups. I drew in deep breaths, feeling a wave of new energy fill my whole being. In the distance rose the towers of the government house, bathed in a beautiful display of light. I was hushed into admiration, and only after some time did I manage to speak at all. "What a night! I have never experienced such peace." Liza smiled and explained, "All the well-balanced inhabitants of the colony have pledged to avoid emitting negative currents of thought. Thus the effort of the majority merges into enormous continual prayer, hence the atmosphere of peace all around us." For some time we gazed in wonder at the soul-stirring scenery, trying to absorb the night's opalescent light and soothing calm. Then we returned to the living room, where Liza's approached a small, radio-like apparatus. My curiosity was instantly aroused, and I wondered what we were going to hear. "Messages from the Earth?" my kind friend, reading my thoughts, explained. "We aren't going to hear any voices from the planet. Our broadcasts here are based on vibratory currents far more subtle than those on Earth." "But are there no means," I inquired, "of picking up broadcasts from Earth?" "Of course there are. And they do it in all the ministries. But in our homes we must concern ourselves only with our present condition and activities. After all, the work programs in the different departments, the tidings from higher spheres, and lofty teachings are much more important to us than any earthly problems." The remark was just, but, still bound by domestic ties, I insisted, "Do you really think so? What about our relatives left behind? Our parents? Our children?" I was expecting that question. "You see, my friend, on the material plane, we often misinterpret situations. Most of us suffer from emotional hypertrophy. There on Earth we are slaves to exclusivism and inclined to limit our family to those bound to us by blood ties. We go through life heedless of the true principles of brotherhood, and although we preach them to everyone, when it comes to putting our beliefs into practice, nothing counts but our own flesh and blood. Here, however, life presents a different aspect. We have to conquer our old weaknesses and rectify injustices. We are told that in the early days of the colony, every home possessed the necessary equipment to pick up broadcasts from the physical sphere. Everybody insisted on hearing news of his earthly relations, so that, from the Ministry of Regeneration to that of Elevation, the city's inhabitants lived with their nerves on edge. Disturbing rumors interfered with the good order of activities in general. Sometimes whole families were thrown into a state of utter confusion because of bad tidings from their dear ones still on Earth. When collective catastrophes on Earth in any way affected those lodged in the colony, they assumed the proportion of public calamities. According to our records, the city was more like a purgatorial zone than the place of rest and instruction it was meant to be. The late governor was perhaps a little too tolerant, and, as you know, indiscriminate kindness engenders indiscipline and failure. But 2 centuries ago, one of the devoted ministers of the Divine Union urged the governor to change that deplorable situation. Supported by the ministry, the governor forbade the widespread communications with Earth. There was great opposition, but the generous minister who had introduced the measure called to witness Jesus' teaching, "Let the dead bury their dead," and in a short time the innovation was successfully implemented. Still, I insisted, it would be most comforting to have news of our dear ones on Earth. Wouldn't we feel more at rest? Liazos, who had been standing by the receiver without turning it on, continued his explanation, "Now, take yourself as an example to see whether that would be wise. Would you be prepared, for instance, to hear that a beloved son was maligning another, or being maligned himself? Would you maintain the necessary serenity, waiting with faith and acting in accordance with the divine precepts? If someone informed you that one of your brothers had just been imprisoned as a criminal, would you be strong enough to keep calm?" I smiled disappointedly. "We shouldn't try to look for news from lower spheres," Lysis continued obligingly, "except when we are able to render a just service. We must always keep in mind that no one can help justly and efficiently when under emotional or mental stress. So we have to go through suitable preparation before risking any new contacts with our earthly relations. If they offered an adequate field for spiritual love, the exchange would be worthwhile. But unfortunately, the overwhelming majority of incarnate people has not yet attained even a moderate degree of self-control. Most of them lead haphazard lives, drifting with the high and low tides of their material conditions. In spite of our sentiments, we must avoid being drawn into low vibratory spheres." Giving evidence of my stubbornness, I still argued the point, "But Lysis, your father is back on Earth. Wouldn't you like to communicate with him?" "Of course," he answered kindly, "whenever we deserve the joy, and the contact between us is considered opportune, we visit him in his new physical body. But we mustn't forget that we are fallible creatures, and as such should refer to the competent departments and let them decide about the opportunity and merit of such visits. That specialized work is done by the Ministry of Communication. Besides, it's well remember that although it is easier to descend from a higher to a lower sphere than the other way around, there are certain principles regulating communication between the different spheres that must be taken into consideration. They tell us that a true understanding of those still in the lower zones is essential to render them adequate help. It's just as important to know how to speak as to know how to listen. This colony was in a constant state of unrest because its inhabitants, not knowing how to listen, were unable to help efficiently. Thus, the spiritual atmosphere here was often sadly impaired. At Ho's irrefutable arguments, I lapsed into a brooding silence, while Lysis turned on the receiver under my watchful eye. Chapter 24, A Soul-Stirring Appeal. Soft music floated into the room, soothing us with its melodious cadence, while on the screen we saw the announcer in his studio. In a few moments, he began to speak. "This is Station 2, Residence. Our colony continues to broadcast its appeal for peace on Earth. We urge all workers of goodwill to muster their energy to help maintain the moral balance on the Earth. Please, all who can spare a few hours to cooperate in the border zones that connect the dark forces of the lower zone to the human mind, help us. Dark bands of ignorant entities, after having left a bloody trail of war in Asia, are laying siege to the European nations, urging them on to new crimes. Our colony, together with all those dedicated to the work of spiritual hygiene in the spheres nearest to the Earth, denounce this onset of the concentrated powers of evil, and request brotherly collaboration and all possible help. Remember that the cause of peace needs defenders. Join in and cooperate with us to the best of your abilities. There is work for everyone, from the regions of the earth to our very gates. May the Lord bless us." The voice silenced and again I heard the celestial melody. The impressive tones of the call stirred my very soul. Lysis hastened to my aid with his usual explanations. "We are listening to Residents, an old colony closely connected with the lower zones. As you know, it is August, 1939. All the suffering you have gone through lately has left you little time to ponder the grave situation on Earth. But you can see that the Earth's nations are facing the imminent threat of a tremendous war." "Really?" I asked, awed. "But wasn't there enough bloodshed in the last world war?" Liza smiled and looked at me in silence as if lamenting the gravity of the problem. It was the first time that he did not respond to my question. His silence was strange. The immensity of the spiritual services in my new plane of life overwhelmed me. Were there cities of generous spirits asking for assistance and cooperation? The voice of the speaker was presented in the tone of an SOS. His rundown appearance showed on our screen, and his disquieted eyes betrayed his deep anxiety. And the language? I distinctly heard him speak in clear and correct Portuguese. I had thought that all the spiritual colonies communicated through thought vibrations. Were there, then, such great difficulties in the interchange? Seeing my bewilderment, Lysus explained, we are still far from the ideal regions of the mind. As on earth, those who are in perfect harmony with each other may communicate through thoughts, without any of the barriers of speech, but generally, we cannot dispense with the linguistic form in a broad sense. Our area of battle is immeasurable. Earthly humanity, made up of millions of beings, is united with the invisible humanity of the planet, which numbers in the billions. It would be impossible to reach the more perfect zones, right after physical death. Our national and linguistic heritage remain with us, and our thoughts are restricted within our psychic borders. In different sectors or our activities there are a great number of spirits free from all limitations, but we mustn't forget that nothing escapes the principles of sequence at work in the laws of evolution. Meanwhile, the music stopped and the speaker returned. This is Residence, Station 2. The colony continues to broadcast its appeal on behalf of peace on Earth. Dark clouds are gathering over the skies of Europe. Forces of darkness from the lower zone, attracted by the base tendencies of mankind, are spreading in all directions. Devoted benefactors are stationed in political offices, struggling and making great sacrifices on behalf of international harmony. Some governments, however, are too centralized, and offer few possibilities for spiritual collaboration. These countries, deprived of serene and dispassionate counsel, are moving towards a great and terrible war. Oh, beloved brothers of the higher spheres, let us help to preserve peace on earth. Let us help to defend centuries of experience of the numerous centers of Western civilization. May the Lord bless us. After a short silence, and I did not dare speak. After 5 minutes of the shooting music, the voice continued, this is Residence, Station 2. The colony continues to broadcast its appeal on behalf of peace on earth. Fellow workers and brothers, let us invoke the protection of the powerful fraternities of light which preside over the destinies of America. Help us in the preservation of ancient rescue of the defenseless communities. Let us sustain the anguished hearts of countless mothers. All our forces are concentrated on the tremendous fight against the legions of ignorance. Give us all the help you can. We are the invisible part of earthly mankind, and many of us will soon return to the physical sphere to make restitution for past errors. Incarnate humanity is also our family. Let us all unite in one single vibration. We must check the advance of darkness with floods of light, and ward off the blows of evil with the shield of good. Rivers of blood and tears are threatening to flow over the fields of Europe. Let us proclaim the necessity of constructive work and expand our faith. May the Lord bless us. The broadcast was over, and Lysus turned off the receiver. I saw him discreetly away a tear which he could not hold back. With an expressive gesture, he exclaimed, what devoted workers our brothers of Residence are. However, he added sadly with a pause, everything will be useless. Soon earthly humanity will be facing tremendous suffering. But is there no possibility of averting this catastrophe? I asked, greatly moved. Unfortunately, replied Lysus in a grave tone of voice, the general state of affairs is exceedingly critical. In answer to the appeals of residents in other colonies working in the neighborhood of the lower zone, several meetings were held here. But the Ministry of Divine Union has already warned us that war is unavoidable because incarnate humanity, taken collectively, is like an insatiable person who has overeaten at a banquet. The organic crisis which follows is inevitable. Various nations have had an orgy of criminal pride, boastfulness and ferocious selfishness. Now they were experiencing the urgent need to expel these lethal poisons. Anxious to drop the painful subject, Lysus invite me to retire. Chapter 25, A Generous Initiative. Early the following morning we shared a light meal in Lysus' home. As her children were about to take their leave and go off to their jobs, Laura announced to me cheerfully, I have arranged company for you today. Raphael, an old friend of ours who works at the Ministry of Regeneration, will call for you at my request. You may accompany him to the ministry, and there he will introduce you to Minister Genesius in my name. I could find no words to express my gratitude. I was radiant. Lysus was also pleased, and embraced me warmly on leaving. On kissing her son goodbye, Laura recommended that Lysus tell Minister Clarence that she would be along as soon as Raphael came for me. Her generosity touched me deeply, leaving me tongue-tied with emotion. When we were alone, my devoted hostess addressed me kindly, "My brother, new paths are opening to you today. Since your mother doesn't live with us here in the Astral City, I hope you won't mind my taking her place in this moment to offer you a little motherly advice." "Indeed, I am most grateful," I exclaimed, moved. "I shall never be able to express the extent of my appreciation for your kindness." Laura smiled and added, "I heard that you asked for work some time ago." "Yes, yes, I did," I agreed, remembering Clarence's words on the subject. "I also know that you didn't obtain it then, but instead were given permission to visit different ministries which connect us more with the Earth. It is in this regard that, pleading my greater experience, I would like to offer you a few suggestions. Now that you are finally allowed to frequent different departments of work as a preliminary stage of apprenticeship, try to curb, as much as possible, all impulses of mere curiosity. Don't be like moth, fluttering about from light to light. I realize that the sense of intellectual search is very strong in you. As a studious physician, always in quest of new discoveries and problems, it wouldn't be difficult in your present position to drift along undesirable channels. Remember that there are many lessons to be learned far more precious and beneficial than mere analysis of things. Even a healthy curiosity may, at times, be dangerous. Resolute, loyal spirits may overcome these obstacles and accomplish edifying tasks, but the timid and inexperienced ones may encounter pain and bitterness. Clarence has offered you a permit to visit the ministries, beginning with regeneration. Instead of giving vent to your curiosity, study the different lines of activities with searching attention, and lend a willing hand at the first opportunity should you be offered a chance to render a service, however humble, in this ministry. Don't worry about acquainting yourself with the routine of the other ministries. Try to gain the goodwill of all those around you, bearing in mind that the spirit of investigation should always be second to the spirit of service. To pry into one's neighbor's occupations without possessing the due credentials of good service might be considered a great impertinence. Numerous failures in material achievements have their roots in such anomalies. Everyone is ready to be a spectator, yet rare are those willing to accomplish something. Nothing but edifying work endows the spirit with the indispensable merit to claim any new prerogatives. There is plenty of hard work in the Ministry of Regeneration, because the lowest region of our spiritual colony is located there. All groups of generous entities entrusted with the most arduous missions are recruited from its working staff. But those lowly tasks are in no way humiliating. Remember that in all our planes, from the Earth to the highest spheres and the most spiritually evolved zones, in relation to the planet Earth, the greatest worker is the Master Jesus himself. And he wasn't ashamed to wield a heavy saw in a carpenter's shop. Minister Clarence has kindly allowed you to learn, analyze and appreciate these values, but you may, as a wise worker, convert this period of observation into a stage of useful service. Those in authority may justly refuse a request for some special line of work whose practice is legitimately reserved for those who are duly qualified for it through great efforts and much suffering. But they will most certainly accept cooperation of the spirit of goodwill, from those anxious to serve in any capacity. These words, spoken in an affectionate motherly voice, sank into my heart like soothing balm. Seldom in my life had I met such a deep, brotherly interest for my fate. Deeply affected by this wise exhortation, I listened with moist eyes. As if anxious to temper the seriousness of her warning, Laura added encouragingly, "The ability to begin anew is one of the most sublime lessons we may learn. Very few indeed are those who fully understand it, and extremely rare are the incarnate men who distinguish themselves in that line. We must remember, however, the name of Paul of Tarsus, a learned member of the Sanhedrin, and the hope of his people in enjoying an enviable position in Jerusalem, one day retired into the desert to begin his human experience again as a humble weaver. I could no longer contain myself and took both her hands in mine like a son, and covered them with my grateful tears. Liza's mother, gazing into the distance, spoke softly, "I am also grateful, my brother. I believe you weren't brought into this house by a blind stroke of fate. We are all bound by secular ties of affection. I shall soon return to the physical sphere, but we shall continue united by the bonds of our hearts. I hope to see you busy and happy before my departure. Please remember that this house is your home. Work with good cheer and put your trust in God." I raised my eyes to her kind face and experienced the joy that is born of a pure spiritual friendship. I had the impression of having known her as a devoted friend for a long time, although I tried in vain to place her among my earliest recollections. Grateful, I felt like kissing her again and again, but just then there was a knock at the door. With a look of maternal affection, Laura said, "It must be Raphael coming for you. Go now, my friend, and think of Jesus. Work hard for the good of others. It is the only way of finding your own." Chapter 26, New Perspectives. Turning over the wise suggestions of Liza's mother in my mind, I left with Raphael certain that I was about to begin, not the prospective visits of observation, but a term of apprenticeship and useful service. I noted with surprise the imposing beauty of the new district we passed through on our way to where I was to be introduced to Minister Genesius. I was not in my usual inquisitive mood. I experienced instead a form of mental activity which was new to me, and I followed Raphael in silence. Wrapped in fervent prayer, I besought Jesus to assist me in these new ways, so that I might not lack work and the strength to accomplish it. Adverse as I had formerly been to the practice of prayer, I now turned to it as a valuable sentimental mainstay to my determination to serve. From time to time, Raphael cast a curious look at me, as if he did not expect such an attitude on my part. The Airbus stopped in front of a large building and we descended in silence. In a few minutes we were shown into the minister's office. Genesius was an affable old man, whose countenance revealed uncommon energy. Raphael introduced me kindly. "Oh, yes," said the gracious minister, "so, this is our brother Andre?" "At your service," I answered. "Laura has told me about your coming. Please, don't stand upon ceremony." Meanwhile, Raphael respectfully took his leave and gave me an encouraging handshake. He left hurriedly, as he was urgently expected at his work. Genesius then turned his clear eyes to me and said, "Clarence has already mentioned you with interest. The Ministry of Assistance frequently sends us groups of its residents on visits of observation, which, as a rule, are transformed into periods of service." I understood his subtle allusion, and replied, "That's exactly what I greatly desire. I have prayed for the divine forces to assist my feeble spirit, so that my stay in this ministry might also be converted into a period of apprenticeship." My words seemed to have touched Genesius. Therefore, availing myself of the moment, I begged him, "Worthy minister, I realize now that my passage through the Ministry of Assistance was due exclusively to God's mercy, perhaps in answer to my devoted mother's constant intercessions. But I also realize that up to the present moment I have received innumerable benefits without offering the least useful retribution. Surely my place is here amidst the redeeming activities. Please, if possible, let my permission to visit be transformed into the possibility to serve. Now I understand as never before the urgent necessity of redeeming myself. I have wasted too much time in useless vanities and misspent a tremendous amount of energy in ridiculous self-worship." He noticed that I was speaking sincerely. When I had asked Clarence for work, I was not yet clear on what I wanted. I had certainly wanted to work, but perhaps not to serve. I had not yet realized the value of time, or learn to appreciate the sublime blessing of opportunity. I suppose the truth of it was that I really wished to continue being what I had been until then, the proud and respected physician, a slave to my preposterous claims of self, imprisoned within my own opinions. Now, after all I had seen and heard, and realizing the responsibility of each child of God in the infinite scheme of creation, I gave utterance to the best there was in me. At last I was sincere, I was not in the least worried about the kind of work I was to do, but really anxious to carry it out in the sublime spirit of service. He looked at me with questioning eyes. "Are you really the former doctor?"